Thanks for hanging in there, guys. And as always, we like to have you check us out where, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook. Like us, please. I just put a little post up there. I think it was yesterday, I think it was. So check that out. And feel free to go peruse the DNR site where you can pull up a map. It's interactive. It's a pretty cool deal. So check that out.
Yeah, especially if you're crossing state lines.
And you won't be disappointed.
Resource.
Exactly. Exactly. We're going to get to kind of an editorial of mine in a minute. The editorial is etiquette, reality, and safety. Who wins? And so you're going to want to hang around for that one. I did come across a story, and you know, oftentimes we talk about don't be stupid. You know, who's the stupidest outdoor person there, or you know, something like that. Things that make you go, Well, a Wisconsin man's going to take that title for, I think it's going to be probably a month, if not longer, for this one. Wisconsin man is busted after trying to pass off a 49-point game farm buck for a state record.
You can tell a game farm deer.
You don't have 48-point
deer. Yeah, like... That just
wild.
Doesn't happen.
No. Wisconsin man tried to pull a fast one by passing off the rack of a game farm deer as a fair chase buck, and he got his just desserts, as the article says. Report from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, 62-year-old, and I'm sorry, I'm going to use his name, 62-year-old Richard Waters admitted to lying about killing a potential state record non-typical whitetail during the 2024 muzzleloader season following an investigation by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Waters initially made waves in the hunting world in March 2025 when he displayed the 49-point rack at the Open Season Deer and Turkey Expo in Wisconsin Dells. He claimed he killed a buck during muzzleloader season in Marquette County. The non-typical rack was scored by Wisconsin Buck and Bear Club and netted over 306 inches, which would have put it well ahead of the standing state record, a 253-incher. When he went public with the rack, folks in the hunting world cried foul play, saying the buck was almost certainly a game farm deer. Red flags.
Most certainly.
Red flags, folks pointed out on the message boards and scores, included similarity between the rack and a game farm buck in velvet with ear tags, bright white antlers, and fully intact tines. Wisconsin DNR opened an investigation into the buck at that time. Wardens called neighboring landowners to Waters' properties and could not find any record of the buck. Additionally, Waters would not provide any photos of the buck before it was mounted, claiming he didn't take his phone into the field with him. Soon, the DNR wardens discovered that the rack belonged to a buck from Yoder Whitetail Deer Farm. The firm sold the rack to an acquaintance of Waters, who then turned around and sold to Waters for $600. So not only did he not shoot the deer, he didn't even have the initial possession of it. He bought it from somebody else for $600. He then had the buck mounted using a cape from a different deer and hired a photographer to take photos of him with the rack. I'm not going to use the name of the photographer because I think that photographer was duped. He also reportedly asked the photographer to Photoshop a photo of the rack onto another deer's body, but she declined. With this information in hand, the DNR's wardens got Waters to admit that he didn't kill the buck. And
oh my goodness.
Listen to this. God, I thought you were smarter than this, said Waters' wife Brenda, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Waters replied, I'm stupid. Yes. The rack was confiscated and Waters was charged for false registration of a deer by Green Lake District Attorney. Pleaded no contest, was fined $544, and had his hunting and privileges revoked for a year.
That's it?
Well, he didn't kill the deer illegally.
I know, but still, like, come on, guy.
Well, he didn't. Oh, man. Seriously, that ranks right up there. How can you actually buy a deer from somebody else, get a cape from some other deer, and then want to have it photoshopped onto a body of another deer?
Yeah. That's crazy.
All right. Sorry. I'm not buying it. A story that I pulled out of one of your favorite sites, Meat Eater, the Meat Eater website. It's
yep,
all
love
about
them.
Ranello, and it's all about everything outdoors. It's super cool. And it comes out as this article that I'm going to highlight in a second. Whenever you go hunting or fishing with somebody, Ava, that's not in your direct family, what's the first thing you think about?
I don't know.
That you don't know. You're going out in the field or you're going to go fishing with them. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know what you're looking
for.
No,
I don't know. So
are
you worried about safety with that person? Do they know how to hunt? Are they going to be, oh, the sky is falling? Or
I don't know.
Bummer?
Usually I have an idea of how much experience they have before I go out with them.
Okay. Well, it's one of those things that I get to encounter a lot because between the fishing side of it, you have a lot of people that you don't know. I've had many years, you don't know who you're getting in the boat with you. And so the challenge is, what kind of attitude is this person going to have?
Sure.
So I'll give you a prime example. I had a gentleman out at one of the pro tournaments, the national tour, out in Saginaw Bay. And it was a very rough day. I'll say the water was just
choppy and
way
not fun.
Rough. And it was early on when I was running a Land O'Lakes boat, and it was a wrap. So the wrap was basically a vinyl that comes up over the side of the boat. Well, we're driving the boat out, and it's rough, really quite rough, and he isn't enjoying the ride. Well, of course, I'm not driving fast because I've been through this before. You need to get there, and everything has to work. What ends up happening? We get out to fish, and I get a fish on, and I hand the rod to him. He won't get out of the chair. He won't move. So I'm not moving. And I went, what? Oh, no, you're going to hand me the rod. I said, well, you're going to have to move and you net it. No, I'm not. You're going to net it for me this way. And I thought, okay. Then on the way back, the wrap on the boat flopped up on the front deck. And he goes, not only do you have junk equipment, your boat's falling apart. It was a brand new boat. Okay. I had brand new rods and reels. Everything is brand new. And it was a complete nightmare from beginning to end. And the guy that he had the next day, because you alternate partners, mm-hmm. was one of the guys that I fish with, a good buddy of mine, Joe. He got in the boat and he said, wow, you got a better boat than he does. That guy had junk. And my buddy said, oh, really? Where do you come across with that? His stuff is just as new, if not newer, than mine. His boat is newer than mine and all the equipment and everything on it.
Right.
So you can get attitude-y-judies in the boat.
Sure.
And it's frustrating because you don't know who or when the attitude-y-judy will come out to play.
Right.
So point is, the article is, how to assess new hunting buddies.
Before you go out?
Mm-hmm.
Smart.
Good hunting buddies are hard to come by. Great ones are rare. Bad ones, unfortunately, show up more often than they should. In this particular case, the article, 3 days into a 7-day hunting trip is a bad time to realize you brought a Debbie Downer in the woods. Bad hunting partners can turn dream hunts into nightmares faster than you can punch the trigger on a release. So, point is, number one, how do you find or assess them? Hunt local. If you want to preview how someone can perform in the field, don't go on a long trip with them. Spend a day hunting with them in and around wherever you're at.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy. It makes it a lot easier to understand a reaction of a questionable weather condition or otherwise. That's a big thing. And it doesn't take long for the glimmering dreams of an OTC public land hunt to come crashing back to reality, giving your hunting buddy a field test and be mindful of any red flags. Doesn't mean he's a bad person, or they are, but maybe they're not the best hunting partner. Positive attitude. If I could pick one trait, I have to agree with this one 100%. One trait in a hunting buddy, choose a positive attitude every time. Not talking about being naive or having a sense of denial or unrealistic attitude, but being a positive attitude and figure out bad situations. How can we make things better and really be positive, even though things may be really crappy, like you shoot a deer and you got to drag it out of 3 miles of swamp.
Right.
Hey, let's figure out how we can do this best to make it work. If you hunt with a buddy locally, notice they bitch about everything. That's a good indication how they're going to operate in a trip, unless they get lucky. Hunters with poor attitudes rarely kill anything. They'll find any excuse not to scout properly, not to sit in the stand long enough, or even go home early. Same thing holds true with fishing when you're in the fishing tournament side of it. You find guys that don't want to put the time in to find the fish, and that's frustrating as well. So understanding that. Consideration. Can't think of a more appropriate application of the golden rule. Treat others as you want to be treated. Good hunting buddies aren't selfish. They're considerate. Of course, it goes both ways. If you're a hunting buddy who has both of your interests at the forefront, then you should do the same. Considerate hunting partners aren't just worried about killing something, but they want to make the experience good for everyone on board. They want to help you find success, and whether they still have a tag in their pocket or not, and they'll congratulate you if you have the biggest buck of the trip. Bad hunting partners will sulk and whine about their struggles while they reluctantly help you drag out a deer. Been in the situation and it sucks. Nothing will rob the joy of a success like a moping deer hunting partner. Extremely selfish and unfair to the rest of the hunting party. Same thing holds true in fishing. It could be raining, crappy, windy, and it's horrible, and it's, you can barely stand up. But if you, hey, we'll get this figured out. Let's keep plugging away, and eventually, guess what? Things work.
Mm-hmm.
So a key piece to this whole thing. But last but not least, and actually two more left. Good work ethic is a big thing. I think good work ethic, no matter where you go, that's going to be an important piece of it. You need to make sure everybody's contributing. If you're not contributing, odds are I'm not. If I'm the one in charge of inviting somebody, they're not going to be invited back. If they're not working and helping contribute to clean up or whatever, because as you know, more hands make the work light.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big thing. And of course, the bright side, in defense of bad hunting buddies, most of them probably have their ignorance to blame, whether that's from unrealistic expectations or misguided goals. They probably don't see hunting for the challenge that it is. In that case, they might need to see someone set a good example or a good hunting partner. So select wisely.
Yep. It's funny though, because you can think somebody's going to be totally awesome, and then something like that, like you get a nice deer or something, and they're just like, if I would have sat over there, he would have came by me first, you know, like, or something like that. And then just like,
I've had that
not happy
fishing.
For you.
Yep.
Yeah. That's sad crazy.
Deal. It's a sad deal. So on to the, now to the weekend story.
The boat and story.
It, well, the whole, the, and this is my verbiage. When etiquette, reality, and safety collide.
Okay.
Okay. So Sunday, we're heading out. I had a friend of mine that was out there. He's a local guy, buddy of mine, Ed. They live in the area. And he has a boat kitty corner to us out at Port Washington. And he had boat issues. The motor wasn't running right. And you don't want to be going out on Michigan if your engines aren't running right. So we looked at the small engine, and then they didn't have time to get anything for the bigger one. He said, well, tell you what, you got, it was four guys. He was taken out. I said, tell you what, let's go. Really? I said, yeah, let's, oh, all four of us, we'll five in the boat, let's go fishing. Well, we head out in the morning. We don't make the corner coming out of the first break wall. And it's such a thick pea soup, you can't see anything. You could barely see the light coming off. So it's all going to be a radar and GPS day. And very cautiously approaching everything involved. So we head out 9 miles, 10 miles an hour. I'm not in a hurry to go anywhere in the fog. I don't care what my radar says. I'm going to take it cool. So we get out to our area where we start dropping lines, getting our lines out. I didn't want to put too many out too far because visibility, I kid you not, was maybe 150 feet, maybe not more than. And all of a sudden we're sitting there. Here comes a guy who's right next to us. Not paying attention. Now, he had radar, but I think he was setting his lines up. It was a bigger boat, and he finally saw us and turned away. Move forward 10 minutes. I'm looking at the radar. There's a blip. So I put the, what you can do is you can target, create a target for that blip, and it'll give you indications on where it's approaching from, the heading, the rate, and the closure. And he was coming right at the bow, right at my starboard quarter, so off to my right. So I turned to my right so I could avoid him. Sure enough, all of a sudden I hear a horn. He doesn't know I'm there. And he comes within 90 feet. And I'm thinking, he has no radar. He has no idea who's there. And if you get too close to somebody at the wrong angle, you could collide. Mm-hmm. Even though your trolling speeds were only going 2 miles an hour. It was that pea soup like. And I'm thinking, this is nuts. And I said, hey, what? Guess what? We move along. Another 15 minutes, 10 minutes later, another one. Same thing. No horn this time. And about, no kidding, 3 minutes later, somebody else. And they're all going at different angles. Well, we start looking at two of the dots on the radar. And they are suddenly approaching each other off one past me. And I'm looking at another one. They were heading at an exact 90-degree meeting point.
No.
And I don't know what happened at that point, but all I know is it was one dot. It became one dot at one point. So really what it comes down to is this. Too many people are going out to somewhere to go fish. I'm going fishing, whether it's cloudy or cloudy's fine, others fine. But when you don't have the capability to be safe on a body of water that you're on, don't do it.
Sure.
There's
you
etiquette.
Need to have certain things.
There's etiquette and there's reality of you're putting other people at risk. Don't do it. Be safe. Understand that coffee tastes pretty good. And when it clears up a little bit, you can come back out. And it did, or stay close enough to shore so you have reference. But don't go out. Do that. So anyway, there's my rant for today.
Have a radar if
exactly,
you're going out in the fog.
Exactly. Hey, you guys, have a great weekend. Thanks for hanging out with us in the show today. For Ava and me, I'm Eric. We are the Valley Outdoors. Enjoy the outdoors. Take a friend fishing with you and have a great time. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.